Elizabethan England was a fertile time for music. The Virgin Queen loved music and dance and encouraged her subjects to do the same. Shakespeare's plays are filled with music and with language that conveys his understanding of its power to move the human spirit. Naught so stalkish, hard, and full of rage, but music for the time doth change his nature. Ian Capps is the host of HPR's The Early Muse. He's with us in our studio to help us understand just what the music of Shakespeare's time sounded like. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning, Chris. Nice to be here.
In Shakespeare's language, there's lots of wonderful lines about music and reflecting a really deep understanding of it, yeah?
I think so. Shakespeare was really tuned into popular culture.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the music in his plays, there are about 100 songs which are scattered through the plays, mm-hmm. mostly, very few in the histories, but the rest are quite a lot.
Yeah.
And there is no music that has been specified in the first folio, so that nobody has any idea, really, of what the music was except popular culture. And the interesting thing is, for example, we're going to play a piece, I think, by Thomas Morley, which is one of the few named composers who actually wrote. The other one was John Johnson. It's "O Mistress Mine," and that is, it was written by Morley for Twelfth Night. But there is nothing else that tells us what the other music was. So we have to assume that it was popular culture. The ballads that would have been known to the audience, a mixed audience of people who were illiterate or literate or upper middle class, probably not aristocracy much, they would have all recognized exactly what the music was that was being played and how it related to the mood of the play at the time.
So the melody would be a sort of a connection to the audience right down to the groundlings, that everybody knows this tune, yeah?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you mentioned a piece. Let's play a little excerpt of that, get a feel for this.
Oh, mistress mine, where are you roaming? Oh, stay and hear your true love's coming, that can sing both high and low. Trip no further, pretty sweeting, journey's end in lover's meeting. Every wise man's son doth know.
A very stately movement to the music.
Yes, it's a very interesting love song within Twelfth Night. And it's, just one of the things that would have been recognized. And Morley actually wrote that tune. We don't know whether that was the original tune that was sung when the play was first put on.
Could it have been a ballad?
The words are not of the ballads themselves. The words are Shakespeare's in most of these. And he would choose a tune which suited a popular culture, that suited the particular mood or the particular scene that he wanted to present. And that would be it, And the whole audience from the top to the bottom would understand what the relationship was. And that's what the scholars have decided is really how it worked.
A lot of times in the dramatic movement of the play, the song will take on a great deal of significance. Ophelia's songs reveal a great deal about her mental state as it deteriorates. Right. Desdemona has a song just before she meets her fate.
Willow, Willow.
Yes, exactly. And so there's a real understanding of that sort of extra power a song can have to touch an emotion, yeah?
Right, that's right. And then, of course, there were dances.
Yeah.
And popular dances would have been very familiar to people. And that we know a little bit more about the dances that could have been written for plays such as his, and also of Marlowe's plays, of course. And they're really kind of, popular tunes that people would have danced in their private homes and so on and so forth, and they would have understood and heard and seen in the streets, and there it was in Shakespeare's time.
Was this a time in England of music kind of expanding beyond strictly the religious?
Well, popular music had always been played in the streets.
Yeah.
And popular songs would be sung in the pubs, a lot of them bawdy, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And some bawdy stuff appears in Shakespeare.
Yes, it does.
but uh, But the printing of that music did not take place until really the late 16th century. Mm-hmm. Music printing started at the very beginning of the 16th century, but that was mostly sacred, and also dances, but mostly in Italy. And they would have then, by then, people would have had printed music of dances, of songs, so that they would be aware of what was going on, and they would be aware of the music that was available to them.
Was this in part a reflection of the fact that, well, Henry VIII was a music lover? He wrote music himself, didn't
he? Did. They say that it's possible that Greensleeves was actually written by him, but nobody knows.
Really?
Yeah.
But what's one of the things that's fascinating, Ian, about that period of music is that so many of the origins are murky, yeah? As you say, we don't know who wrote several very familiar songs.
Right. There were some. There were some. For example, Robert Johnson's music for The Tempest, mainly, mm-hmm. Was definitely written for The Tempest. Full Fathom Five, Come Unto These Yellow Sands, and those songs were, and of course the most famous of all, which is Ariel's last freedom from Prospero. Where the bee sucks, there suck I. And a cowslip's bell I lie. And so on. He's happy. He's got his freedom.
It works so well as poetry.
And those were specifically written for the play.
Even if you don't know the melody, so many of those songs work well as poetry, don't they?
They do, yes.
We have one more quick excerpt to play. I'm going to ask Lillian to just give us a little sample of one of the other pieces that you brought in.
Well, this is a dance. Yeah.
Dance, good. You can almost see the dance in that particular piece.
Yeah, that was a piece written for the fairies' dance, mainly from the Midsummer Night's Dream, but there are fairies in other plays too.
It makes me wish that more of the early music was incorporated into Shakespeare productions, because it does so much to flesh out the entire experience, doesn't it?
It certainly does, yes.
Ian, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Ian Capps is the president of Early Music Hawaii, the creator and host of The Early Muse on Hawaii Public Radio. He'll discuss music from Shakespeare's time with recordings this Thursday at noon in the Hawaii State Library in downtown Honolulu.